Bonjour! How's everybody doing out there? We hope you're doing well. We hope you enjoyed our royalty-free theme song. You may have heard it before. My name is Matthew Ederer, and this is the AEW Dynamite Deep Dive. Today we will be discussing AEW Dynamite number 192, live from the Broadmoor World Arena, Colorado Springs, Colorado, United States of America. And today we have a very, very special guest on the line. One of my good buddies from back home, longtime wrestling fan, longtime baseball fan, former baseball writer, if I'm not mistaken, Pat Sully. Tell us about yourself and welcome on the show, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, man. Thank you for that warm introduction. Way too much excitement, though. You got these people built up that I'm two varies of special, maybe moderately. But I do thank you kindly. And yeah, I did used to do some baseball writing, and I was in the radio in like another life about a decade ago. But I moved on from those things, but still love talking about sports and love talking about wrestling, especially with the present company. So when you asked if I wanted to pop on for an episode, I had to jump at the opportunity. And hot diggity, we had one hell of an episode of Dynamite.
Oh, man, absolutely. Last week I was a little sour on Dynamite. It felt like I was saying, Dynamite to me is pizza. It's always good compared to some of the absolute shit shows we've had to watch as wrestling fans. Like, the worst Dynamite is better than the best Shotgun Saturday Night or whatever, right? But this was an excellent slice of pizza. Gourmet pie here. This felt like a gift to the wrestling fan, this show, because they knew they were only going to get the hardcores, a lot of competition on this Wednesday night. So they just loaded it up with good wrestling matches and one heck of an MJF Adam Cole promo. So I felt like this was a treat to the hardcore fans tonight.
You'll get no argument out of me. I mean, I'm not going to get it twisted. It wasn't like it was the greatest wrestling show I've ever watched in my life, but far, far above average. And you know what? If I was to watch one wrestling show for this week, I'd be thrilled if this is the 2 hours I dedicated to it. Had a great time watching tonight, and sure, we'll have a good time looking back. Or maybe we'll talk ourselves right out of it and be like, you know what, this is all dumb.
It happens. It happens from time to time. But yeah, let's not waste too much time. We'll catch up after the show. Let us talk about AEW Dynamite from Colorado Springs. Our show opened with Orange Cassidy. Tony Khan loves starting with that Jane theme song. I don't blame him. It's a great way to kick off a television show. Crowd goes nuts as per usual. And we had one of the better Orange Cassidy title defenses in this awesome run. This was title defense number 24, if I'm not mistaken, and he faced Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana and the Embassy, who came out and then walked away. So Swerve and the Prince versus Orange Cassidy for the AEW International title. A fabulous match, man. Just off the top, what'd you think of this one?
This was my match of the night. Like, we already gave this show its flowers in the first 2 minutes here, but for me, this was the highlight. Not that there weren't other banger matches to come that we'll discuss, but nothing topped this in my eyes. I think this might even be my favorite of this Orange Cassidy run. And in fact, this Orange Cassidy storyline is probably my favorite thing that AEW is doing right now. I'm obviously hyped to see what Bryan and Okada will bring, and I'm hyped for matches coming down the road, but just for an actual active storyline, this is what has my attention the most. And I love this like physical amortization thing they have going with Orange Cassidy, where it feels like when he drops the title, it might not necessarily be that he's beaten by a better wrestler. It might be the guy who's booked the week his body gives out. And I just love that wrinkle to this title run. It's a title run with purpose and meaning, which is just so refreshing when you've so many, as the kids would say, mid title reigns.
A couple of them have been mid. Yeah, I definitely think of the Hangman. But they're doing a good job with Orange Cassidy. Seems like they're doing a good job with Chris Statlander so far. I feel like it is a problem that hopefully AEW is aware of and are kind of trying to right the ship on. But yeah, no, like, this Orange Cassidy run has been something truly special. And he's been a great wrestler for a long time. He's still so divisive as this character. A lot of people still will not give Orange Cassidy the time of day. But I implore you to go back and watch some Fire Ant from Shikara. I'm telling you, this guy has been good for years and years and years, and I'm glad that he's getting a chance to show it on the main stage. So the story of this match was, well, it was a WrestleMania main event. They kicked out of each other's finishers. They were going hard. This was the PWG style match. But the story was that Swerve Strickland is one of the more vicious Orange Cassidy opponents. He's not afraid to cheat openly. He's not afraid to punch you right in your mouth. And Orange Cassidy had to cheat to counterattack Swerve Strickland's game plan here. So there was a point where Swerve hits the house call kick, as he calls it now, and the Swerve stomp from the top rope. That definitely sold me. I thought we were getting a new champion. But Orange Cassidy kicked. Yeah, man. That was an excellent, excellent near fall. Orange Cassidy kicked out of that, though. Actually, previous to that, Cassidy hit his orange punch and the beach break, two of his finishers, boom, boom, quick succession. But Swerve kicked out of that. So they were trading roll-ups. Swerve keeps pulling Orange's tights, and Orange kicks out. Finally, Orange reverses the pile, pulls Strickland's tights, and turnabout is fair play, as they say, Patrick Sully, because our champion Orange Cassidy retains with a roll-up and a fistful of jeans or something. Belt, I guess it was. And Orange Cassidy gets the last laugh here. Just an excellent wrestling match. This was so great.
For sure. And one thing that I liked about it that I think makes it a cut above the typical, as you put it, PWG-style match, the WrestleMania main event style on as an opener for your weekly TV show.
Yeah.
But with this Orange Cassidy storyline where he keeps being beaten up and feels like more matches than not, the other wrestler specifically works over his right hand. And we saw Swerve banging against the post in this one. I love Cassidy's selling of the hand, and the commentators were on point this week, bringing up that, you know, the orange punches, whatever fake that they throw, like at 40% effectiveness right now. And he couldn't even like fully make his covers. His selling is just excellent, and it adds to this whole storyline. So like, it had all the like the pretty moves, a few near falls that actively got me, but on top of that, it all made sense in the context of the match that they were giving us. So like, I loved every bit of it. I didn't think it was overkill. I could see people looking at it that way, and as you alluded to earlier, some people aren't feeling Orange Cassidy as a character. Teach their own, but I have no problem with it, and I love this run in particular. Like, this is the best stuff I've seen out of him since, you know, Fire Ant with a Young Lions Cup like a decade ago.
Absolutely. It's because I was just, I don't know what it was, but I've been watching some Shikara lately, and I was just like, I need to deep dive into this Fire Ant. I need to reassure myself that Cassidy is as good as people say he was. So you check out Cage Match, the top rated Shikara matches, and there's a lot of Fire Ant just randomly in there. Have you ever seen Fire Ant versus Vin Gerard? I think it was the tournament that you
Young
just
Lions
referenced.
Cup, yeah, Young Lions Cup final. Excellent, excellent match.
Oh my god. So
it was one of those ones where the locker room empties and all the Chikara workers are around the ring. I think I remember there being a burning hammer in that match.
Yes.
Like they went all out. It was excellent.
There certainly was a burning hammer. Yeah, it was incredible. I would say that's a junior heavyweight style classic match, honestly. Like, must see, like an indie classic. Vin Gerard versus the Fire Ant. So yeah, we can't sing this guy's praises enough. I definitely thought this was like a special wrestling match. We do a year-end countdown. This match will show up on that list. It's certainly an A in Canada. If I had to put a rating on it, the star rating, we're going to go 4.25 Fire Ants, because that is 85%. That's a solid A in Canada, not an A-. That's a fucking A where we come from. A. All right. That was terrible.
Oh, take off, eh?
Holy fuck, bud. Yeah. Better take a hike now, eh? Moving on, Bryan Danielson makes his way to the commentary table, and we get a little hype video, which we also saw on New Japan Dominion, if you checked that show out. Bryan Danielson in the deserts of Las Vegas, Nevada, apparently, challenging Kazuchika Okada for Forbidden Door 2 live from Toronto, Ontario. Very exciting.
Oh, yeah. I fully expect that to be a banger. One thing when Brian came out that Excalibur said, and I don't know if he's been saying it for a while and I've missed it, but referred to him as the GOAT, which you know, acronym greatest of all time. And I took it at face value and started thinking about it. You know what? I can see that. It's definitely a point you could argue, and everyone's going to have an opinion. And, well, opinions are like assholes. We all have one. They're all different, and everyone else's seems a little shittier than our own. But nevertheless, you know what? If you were to tell me you thought Bryan Danielson was the greatest wrestler of all time, I can't tell you you're wrong. And I kind of love that. We've been following this guy for 20-some years, and goddamn, he has lived up and exceeded any and all hype and expectations we would have had back in the day.
Absolutely.
Anyways, good story long. Can't wait for that match. That's going to be a banger.
Fuck yeah, brother. Are you making any plans to try to check out that show live?
But here's the sad thing. I won't allude to something that the listeners won't know, so I'll do a quick recap. A fellow wrestling fan where I live in Barrie, Ontario, asked if I wanted to go. I thought about it. Then when I saw the ticket prices, I pump faked like Carmelo Anthony. So I ended up not actually doing it. Part of the reason being, you know this, Matt, I bought tickets for WrestleMania 18.
Yes.
In hindsight, I maybe should have been ecstatic about that. But it's 2011. It's November. WrestleMania is coming back to Canada. Yes, I'm going to go. Oh, wow. Mania 17 is the greatest show I'd ever seen. My least favorite wrestler in the world is Hulk Hogan. Who gets signed 2 months later and I ended up paying to watch him in basically the main event? Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I was livid. Booker T and Edge had a match over Shampoo. I couldn't have been more disappointed, even though in hindsight, a lot of people would have loved to trade places with me. So I don't blame you if you think I'm an idiot who, you know, spoiled what would have been an amazing opportunity. Fast forward a quarter century later, and basically the inverse happens where I'm like, nah, you know what? I don't think I'm going to do this. Oh, crap. So now Bryan Danielson's facing Okada and CM Punk's back. Ah, man. Nah, I goofed. I wish I had those tickets.
Nah. Well, you can always pay even more exorbitant prices at the door from a scalper. But it'll be an excellent show on television, too, man. Like, I'm actually... Oh, yeah. I'm hoping to get like media credentials. It's still up in the air, but just because I'm not sure how many people are getting media credentials, but I could sneak my way on that list, try to get into that press conference perhaps, and just absolutely just eat muffins and pickles and be an obnoxious dick. No, I'll probably be professional, but no, it would be awesome to just attend that show in any regard. But if I can't, I will gladly watch it on the television and do a podcast about it afterwards, because I'm sure it's going to be something special. And sometimes, man, with those truly classic matches, you do lose a little bit live. Like something like FTR versus DIY, 2 out of 3 falls. I saw that live and watched it back on the television. And I got to tell you, it's a better match on TV than it was live. I truly believe that. And sometimes, like, those really classic matches, they kind of lose a little bit when you're standing or you're sitting up in, like, the nosebleeds or something, right?
That's valid. It's, you know what, one thing I love with any sporting event is either rewatching it later or at least, say, you go to a ball game, you watch the highlights after. There's just something fun about that. And ditto wrestling shows, although with those, I end up rewatching the whole card if I had a good time. And you're right, it's a very different experience. Both definitely have their virtues, though. Like, you know what? I'd still love to go and then rewatch later. I'll live. True. I'll be fine watching it at home in my pajamas eating greasy food. That's an okay second place.
No doubt. Yeah, that's the beauty of actually going, is there's nothing stopping you from then watching the show after, right? You don't have to necessarily not get the other experience. But yeah, no, it's going to be a heck of an energy in that building for sure. And we have two matches that should be all-time classics. So if nothing else is booked on the show already, shut up and take my money. Philip J. Fry style. Let's move on. Sure. Yes, sir. Let's move on to the second match. I thought this was another banger, man. Honestly, this is my favorite build of match, maybe, which is huge underdog who takes the fight to a large betting favorite. This was a trios match, the Blackpool Combat Club of John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, who was on one tonight, versus Chaos, Chuck Taylor, Trent Barretta, and Rocky Romero. And this match starts with, I believe it was Beretta throwing a chair at Moxley as they were coming through. No, at Wheeler Yuta as they were entering the ring. Wheeler was still half in the crowd. And the story of this was Trent Beretta hates Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler Yuta hates Chuck Taylor. And there's lots of interplay, lots of storyline going on. Just an all-out war, a nine-minute sprint. Blackpool Combat Club versus Chaos. How'd you feel about this one?
Brother, so for an 8-minute match involving six people, they got as much out of those 8 minutes as possible. It was like a really sort of like the opener for being kind of a party match where there were 900 moves. There was still a great story because of Wheeler Yuta leaving the best friends, 6-8 months ago for the Blackpool Combat Club. And oh my God, they remembered that. And they capitalized on it. Like even the match itself ended, Yuta didn't get the decision per se, but he had the hammer and anvil elbows right into his I don't know if the storyline trainer or the guy that brought him in Chuck Taylor, but regardless, yeah, like you said, Beretta, Taylor, Yuta, there's all this beef and heat. So that was the main story of the match. That Claudio uppercut out of the moonsault was maybe spot of the show. I want to frame that shit and put it above my bed. It's amazing.
Yeah, Trent Beretta.
Even Brian on commentary, like, he was on point just using it to build the Okada match, being like, hey, these are the guys that Okada chooses to hang out with. You would have made the right choice. Just little subtle jabs like that, not belittling the wrestlers, belittling the personality. Like, it was all so good for 8 minutes.
Yeah, 4 8-minutes. But sometimes that's all you need. Like, I'd rather a match do this and get in and get out than overstay its welcome, which sometimes matches in this style tend to do. But, you know, this achieved everything it needed in 8 minutes. I thought it was great, great stuff. Yeah, you pointed out the Trent Beretta moonsault. But, yeah, so the story of the match is the Blackpool Combat Club is trying successfully to overwhelm Chuck Taylor, not let him tag out. Isolate Chuck Taylor is the word that I was looking for there. And they were doing a good job of it. But when Chuck Taylor tags out, his partners, specifically Trent Beretta, are shot out of a fucking cannon on this night. Trent Beretta was having a day and he was going off on everyone. He was probably, in kayfabe, you'd say the MVP of the match, just in terms of how much offense he was getting on everyone. Finally, he goes for a moonsault to the outside and eats the king of all European uppercuts. Randy Orton-esque timing here, dare I say, from Claudio. Just destroying, vaporizing Trent Beretta with a fucking Euro uppercut. To the moon he went.
Oh, dude, you hit it on the head. Like, Beretta was the MVP of this match. And, you know, it's one of those things. I don't expect Beretta to ever really get, or any of the best friends to really get above this level. But, you know what? They're cashing their checks. They're putting on some great matches, as we saw tonight. I'm sure a lot of people would trade places with those guys. I love the act, and they aren't forcing down our throats or anything. It's good. Give me more best friends, please and thank you. Just have them jobbers to the stars, and I will watch.
Agreed. I'm actually surprised with, like, the Paul Whites and the Mark Henrys and even Daddy Magic, all the people who have done commentary. I'm really surprised that Chuck Taylor has not done much commentary for AEW, because he is an excellent professional wrestling commentator. He's really good on PWG and Shikara shows, just like kind of doing a character, kind of having fun, but also like really knowledgeable about wrestling, and he knows how to put characters over. I'm always impressed with Chuck Taylor's commentary, so I'm surprised they don't use those guys more just in general. I like them both a lot. I think they're quite talented. They're due for a tag team title run. If the fucking Ass Boys got one, they can get one down the line. But anyway, with everything going on there, Trent Beretta eats this disgusting uppercut in the ring that leads to Jon Moxley reversing a Rocky Romero submission into a bulldog choke. While that's happening, Yuta flies in out of nowhere, hits Bryan Danielson's Busaiko knee on Chuck Taylor. And then I counted. I think he hit 53 elbows in succession on poor Chuck Taylor, the departed remains of Chuck Taylor here. 53 elbows, I believe, from the hammer and anvil position while Rocky Romero taps out to John Moxley's bulldog choke. So I just loved every second of this match. This was just pro wrestling joy for me. I want to sprinkle this match on my fucking pancakes in the morning. Great stuff. We're going 4.5 million elbows. No, 4.25. Sorry. The same rating as the previous match. I loved it just as much. 4.25 million elbows. Another A in Canada. Fucking excellent job, fellas.
Yeah, no argument here. And a hat tip to you, an absolute professional journalist. Counting 53 of anything is no goddamn fun. So good for you, bud.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I was thinking he was gonna stop around the 20 mark, and he just kept going. So I was like, well, now I have to fucking keep going. But yeah, I believe that's where it stopped. I might have missed one or two in there. But you know,
No, we all believed you. No one was gonna check your facts.
You're right. You're right. Due diligence aside, I fucking tried because I care about you, the listener, and you, Pat Sully. Anyway, moving on. Hung Bucks backstage. The Hung Bucks, of course, are the Hangman and the Young Bucks. It's so they're a dick joke. I get it, whatever, but you are kind of just the dicks at that point. You are the Johnsons. Maybe rethink the Hung Bucks. Anyway, a little bit of fire here.
I'm glad you said that. I also hate that nickname. Like, it seems like something hilarious that like Scott Keith would have posted in a review 20 years ago, or that like someone would call them on a message board. Don't put it on the goddamn TV show. That's so, no, it's too it's too bad a joke. It's sub B sharps.
Yes, exactly. Not only is it sub B sharps, but at least that's like clean. It's crude too, you know. And I get it if you're heels, but yeah, you lose the Hung Bucks name for the fiery triumphant baby faces, Adam Page, Matt, and Nick Jackson, who did cut a good promo here, challenging the Blackpool Combat Club, the trio we just saw, Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta. Versus Bucks and Hangman Page, and Bryan Danielson accepts that match. So there we go. That's happening next week on Dynamite. Trios tag, loading up Dynamite next week.
And hey, like you said, with these trios matches, you know that one's also going to be good. Like, there's pretty much no chance having those six guys together is going to be in any way not amazing. So yeah, I'll be tuning in next week for that. That's one thing I'll give my flowers to AEW for that as well. They actually announce matches for upcoming shows. Excalibur did that crazy rundown around the end of the show, and it was effective. A few of those matches, I'm like, you know what? I want to see that. So they have my attention for the next time. I wish more wrestling companies did the same.
It's the entire point of professional wrestling. It's shocking how little care is put into that portion of it, especially in like prime Vince McMahon years. I do feel like WWE does a better job of it, but yeah, it should be a prerequisite. I'm tripping all over my words today. Should be a prerequisite.
I got you.
Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You stuck the landing. You're good.
I got it. Little bit of turbulence there, but yeah, man, every company should fucking do that. Why don't they? Moving on, brother. Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay promo. Highlights from Wrestle Kingdom, which is at absolute worst, if you want to be a dick about it, the second best match of the year and an all-time classic. Like just something you must see if you have not. Will Ospreay wants revenge for what Kenny Omega put him through. And we get an official announcement, I guess, here on Dynamite of Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay 2 at Forbidden Door in Toronto.
I have no notes. It should be another banger. It was, like you said, great at Wrestle Kingdom. Looking forward to the sequel.
Yes, sir. Yeah, man. Nothing more to add on that. Just can't wait. Just cannot wait for that to happen. We get the MJF and Adam Cole promo. This was long, but I loved every second of it. This was around 20 minutes. So a Monday Night Raw style promo in length, if not in, you know, practice. MJF was on fire here, of course, running down the fans and then calling out to Adam Cole, essentially. I guess he didn't call out Adam Cole. Adam Cole's music hit for the surprise pop. And then Adam Cole starts running it down Ring of Honor first, really. he was disappointed once. His heart was broken when CM Punk left him as a child, not the wrestling business, but left MJF. So he turned the channel to Ring of Honor one day, and, well, he thought it sucked, Pat Sully. Indie geeks, I believe, was the term he used. But then he saw a man in Adam Cole who had the look, he had the promo, he had the size. Note for later in this here dialogue. But it seemed like Adam Cole was the chosen one, the star to take over. And, you know, if MJF was going to enter this wrestling business, he would one day feud with Adam Cole, the Panama Playboy. But now he's here and he's looking at this Panama Playboy, and he's more of a Panama Game Boy. Fun line there for Maxwell Jacob Friedman. More preoccupied with playing video games and tucking his balls in Britt Baker's purse than pursuing world titles. He says Adam Cole's physique is such that he makes crack whores jealous, or some such line like that. A lazy heel line from MJF, but I get that he's not. That was the proper amount of attack on Adam Cole's physique. I feel like if he's going to be the heel who says something, you make it a dumb, cheesy line like that. MJF says the fans think Adam Cole isn't utilized properly, but AEW has done everything they could to put Adam Cole over. The lights, the big entrance, the hot girl, when all you have to do for MJF is ring the bell. Call back to Adam Cole promo in NXT versus Karrion Kross. So they're just operating on it's just a fucking excellent work here by MJF. He calls out Vince McMahon by name, saying that an individual in Titan Towers did not think Adam Cole could make it. His name is Vince McMahon. At first, MJF thought the old man lost his marbles, but looking at Adam Cole tonight, he can say Vince was right. So before we move on to the retort, man, what'd you think of this fucking work here from Maxwell Jacob Friedman? And in general, what are your MJF thoughts?
Oh, this promo was absolute whopper. I mean, you could pick nits about him bringing up the physique thing, but it worked from the sense that, like, he's supposed to be hated, got the people to hate him very effectively, and I feel like he didn't have them quite in the palm of his hand during the Ring of Honor section. I remember thinking, like, man, this part of the promo would have killed it if it was Dayton, Ohio, or, like, Chicago, or some sweatbox in New Jersey where, like, Ring of Honor ran a lot. Colorado Springs may not have hit the same notes, but when he started getting into, like, the physique stuff, the crowd really got into it. One highlight for me was hearing one lady, as soon as he brought it up, you just could hear her single voice just yell out, "Stop!" And I died. I was all in for that. Oh, bad pun, unintentional. But love MJF on the mic, and they're doing kind of a very meta build with him, where, like, having him not wrestle as much, that would almost be my criticism, is we don't get to see him wrestle all that often. And since, you know, for us diehard wrestling fans, we've seen enough of him. We probably knew about him before AEW. And yeah, we know he's great. We buy in. But I could see it maybe being helpful to have your champ on more of the show's wrestling, if they're trying to catch people, you know, after they're watching their basketball games and so on. That being said, the way that they have turned all these builds into how he barely wrestles, I love what they've done. I see people's criticisms, but I don't necessarily agree. Short story long. He was a banger on the mic tonight. And the nice thing is, even though he poked all that fun at Adam Cole's physique, as you get into the retort, Adam Cole left with his head held high. He got the last word, so it doesn't really hurt him. In the end, the babyface made the heel agree to the match and got the heel pissed off and kept his cool. So the babyface acted like the person you want to be. The heel was a dick who you want to beat up. Everyone did what they should do, and I want to see that match also.
100%, man. Yeah. The only thing I would say is I kind of do agree with the people who say, like, MJF should be on the show a little more. He should wrestle a little more, just because he is quite talented. And I think he would just help the show by wrestling more, and it would help everyone he's working against to have the world champion there. But I do think they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it too a little bit with this Adam Cole non-title match next week on Dynamite, which is set up here when Adam Cole responds to Maxwell Jacob Friedman. So not quite as good as MJF's portion, but I thought it was, if MJF's was like a 10, this was a 9. If MJF's was a 9, this was an 8. It was right there. Cole questions Friedman's obsession, I guess you would say, with other people's relationships. Maybe that's why your fiance left you, Max. Big reaction for that one. That's a typical babyface line for MJF, but it always works. Might as well bring it out. Adam Cole lost me a little bit by saying that MJF is a world-class douchebag. Whoa. But he got me back with saying, in regards to his body, the reason why he questions Adam Cole's body is because Adam Cole's body of work is unquestionable. MJF can't touch him in the ring. And he makes a point to say that if you want to go backstage and piss in a cup, his words, and take a test to see who's natural and who's not, I'm sure we know who's going to come out on top on that one. So the whole piss in a cup steroid allegation there for Adam Cole got a huge reaction. And like you said, that was the retort to the body shaming thing, which was, I mean, fair play to Cole, fair play to MJF. I'm sure they worked that out and talked about it backstage. And that's the kind of thing that works for me, because the babyface does get the last laugh and his head held high.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of hit the nail on the head. Like there are little flaws, but all in all, they entertained me for 20 minutes. When you just now said that it was a 20 minute promo, I was legitimately surprised. It honestly flew by. I didn't think that it was 1/6 of the entire show. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But they did give us a lot here. So Cole says that nobody backstage respects MJF. Everyone thinks he's a selfish, conceited asshole, does the bare minimum to get where he is. MJF says he'll cry in his money about it. And that's tough talk coming from Keith Lee's manager. Another big laugh from the crowd there. Cole says he's better than MJF, and they know it. MJF says he'll fight Adam Cole anytime, anywhere. And Adam Cole smirks, says, attaboy, champ. Hits the Adam Cole baby pose. Huge, huge reaction from the Colorado Springs crowd. And I think I might be wrong about this. I might be mistaken. But I think at the very end of this, when his theme song hit, he mouthed to MJF, that was good. And then kind of tried to turn that into a sarcastic thing. Was like, oh yeah, good job, champ, good job. And then he was like blowing kisses at him. But I was pretty sure I saw like slightly out of character moment there. Adam Cole saying like, oh, that was good, MJF. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I saw that. Anyway, excellent promo. This was as good as the first two matches. And from this point in Dynamite, I'm thinking like, wow, are we sitting on an all-timer here? It did kind of hit a little bit of a slower patch. The first half of the show was definitely the highlight. The second half, not as good. But to this point, I'm thinking, what a fucking Dynamite we are getting here.
Oh, no argument here. And then we get the Hardys and Ethan Page up next, which, you know, there's no bigger Matt Hardy mark than me, possibly. So my fist was firmly up in the air. It looked like I was a member of PG-13 in 1997. It was that.
Oh, you are. Yes. Fabulous. Outstanding. Yes. You are definitely a broken Matt Hardy mark. My only complaint with this whole gimmick is, how many times does AEW have to do the "we own your contract" thing? I feel like this is the 9th time that they've done this with various wrestlers. I feel like Ethan Page's contract has bounced around from stable to stable. But anyway, I guess Ethan Page, who is still in the firm, who are still kind of a thing, is now owned by the Hardys. But the Hardys will do Ethan Page right. They will try to kill his ego. It will be an ego death. And then Isaiah Cassidy moans in Ethan Page's ear. And that was pretty much the gist of what happened here.
That's exactly what happened. But moaned in his ear really just hits different than how I had it written on my notes. So we'll go with that.
Oh, man. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, my friend.
No, that's exactly what happened. He moaned in his ear. 100%.
All right, moving on to the next match. We had a little ECW, a little bit of ECW here. Match number 3, a Texas Tornado Tag, the Jungle Hook and Jungle Boy Jack Perry versus La Facción Ingobernable, boy, I wish I could roll my R's. Dralístico and Pero Peligroso, who is also Preston Vance, who bled like a fucking stuck pig in this match. So I think this was a great match, probably a shade below the first two. I would say if you're going to call it an A, you would have to call it an A-. There were some flaws, but this just reminded me of just a fun ECW romp with the son of Taz here.
Do you know if Vance was busted open hard way on that? Because I know it was on the chain punch off the guardrail, but it seemed like a weird match to have Juice in. To have blood in. I'm not talking about Juice Robinson.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. It didn't seem to fit. But at the same time, so this was a match up until that point. Honestly, I wasn't really feeling it. And then it got really, really good. And I don't think it was necessarily because of the blood. I think that's also when they were going to pick up the pace of the match. It just happened to be when the blood was. So don't know if it was intentional or not. But always helps a brawl. And yeah, I think it was a story of two matches. First half, I was not feeling. One of my personal pet peeves, if you're going to do garbage matches, and God, I'm about to sound like Jim Cornette, but do stuff that doesn't hurt that looks like it does, not the other way around. Why are you whipping someone with an extension cord? It bothered me so much. Not since like the cookie sheets back in ECW, as you mentioned, has a weapon looked so ineffective and likely kind of sucked to get hit with. And I'm not a fan of the crowd brawling necessarily, but definitely the second half of this match picked way up for me. And the right guys went over. I think both Jungle Boy and Hook, you can make a lot of money with those guys. And both of them are guys that I look forward to seeing on a week-to-week basis. So I don't really have any complaints. It just, as you said, definitely the lowest point of the show to this point, while not being bad.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Well put. I wonder, too. I feel like it might have been a hard way on the chain bump that you referenced before. So, yeah, Hook wraps a chain around his fist and jumps from the barricade, delivering like a Roman Reigns Superman punch, a George St. Pierre, if you will, Superman punch with the chain, and just fucking explodes Preston Vance's forehead. And I kind of think the level of blood, to me, I feel like it's tough to say. I feel like it may have been real, because why would you blade that hard? But I mean, like, also, he's a young wrestler. Blade jobs are a very iffy thing. Who knows? It was definitely that, like, if you're going to do a blade job in this match, that's the fucking place where you do it. So I don't know. It's hard to say. But also, he did absolutely clock that man in the goddamn forehead with a fucking chain. Like, he did look like a shoot chain punch, Sully. So I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that one.
Right. And you know what? Even if it was a blade job, we could question doing it in the middle of the show in probably the least important match. Oh, wait, right. No. Takeshita and Ace the next match was, okay, the second least important match on the show. But at the same time, would we have spent 5 minutes on Preston Vance out of everyone in this match otherwise? Like, no disrespect to him, but he probably would have been the least memorable guy, except for the fact that, oh yeah, he was wearing the proverbial crimson mask.
No. And sometimes you can overdo blood, but sometimes it's a little bit of a cheat code in this match. Like you said, this match absolutely just took off when the blood started flowing. So the big spot of the match was Hook delivering a T-bone suplex off the apron through two tables onto the bloody mess, the bloody remains of the Pero Peligroso there. And I thought this was, it kind of looked a little more nasty for Hook than it did for the Pero. Hook like landed on his neck onto Peligroso, which I'm sure hurt both guys and sucked a lot, but it kind of looked like Hook could have jammed his neck there. That was nasty for both parties. Anyway, Jungle Boy Jack Perry in the meantime tornado DDT on Dralístico, and he locks in the snare trap as Hook enters the ring and locks in the red rum, the Taz mission onto surprisingly jacked assistant Jose. And that is your finish, the double tap out. The baby faces Jungle Hook win a very good, wild, bloody brawl.
Can I just do a Joey Styles for 3 seconds?
Please.
Paqueta Hajime! All right, I'm good. Scratch the itch, thank you.
Oh my God! All right.
Out of elimination! Okay, no. Now we're good.
Now we're good. Now we're good. I'll spare
everyone the cat fight.
yes, please. Or the famous Joey Styles quote, fuck poor people. Anyway, I thought this...
I hope I didn't just break everyone wearing headphones there. My apologies. That was a shoot laugh out loud.
God damn it. Very good match. Probably not quite great. If you're a huge ECW mark, maybe you'd go that far. But yeah, I would still say very good. B+, let's say, in Canada. Let's consult the calculator. 75%. I believe that is 3¾ stars. We're going to go 3¾ total elimination. 3¾ John Cronuses. 3¾ Cronai.
Ass baby, ass.
All right, let's go. Next up, Tony Khan continuing his Cal Ripken-like streak of appearing on his own television show. It's like 5 or 6 weeks in a row. But hey, I don't mind Tony as much as some people seem to. Tony Khan announces the main event of the first Collision, June 17th, Saturday, which is a trios tag, the Switchblade, Jay White, Juicy Juice Robinson, and your boy, Samoa Joe, versus FTR. And CM Punk.
I like this because I'm guessing I'm not the only one that has hopes that they eventually do Joe versus Punk. I don't know, I guess their fifth match. I think they had 3 in Ring of Honor and 1 for the Internet Wrestling Cartel or ICW. Pittsburgh Indie from 15 years ago.
Goddamn.
But I'm obviously hoping they do that. And I think the right call is to have them beat up first, remind people of matches that were basically sold on DVDs on the internet 20 years ago. Like, you need to build the story up. So I really like it. That match should bang as well. I feel like I've been saying that a lot, but there's a lot of wrestlers I like in this company and they keep putting them together and that works for me.
Hey, man, nothing wrong with that. It is in a lot of ways. And if you watch some old Chikara, some old Ring of Honor from like 04, 03 to like 2011 or some old PWG from that time period or like you said, whatever, International Wrestling Cartel, IWA Mid-South, you see the influence. It is kind of a love letter to indie wrestling still, even though like some of the biggest stars are, you know, ex-WWE. WWE guys, they were the indie stars of yesteryear.
That nobody admits to having watched IWA Mid-South, even those of us that absolutely did.
Oh man. Well, I gotta check out I gotta go back into the Chikara / IWA Mid-South and watch me some Hero versus Kingston. The real hatred on the professional wrestling screen. I miss Eddie Kingston. God damn it. Come back soon.
Come on, you're preaching to the choir right now. I guess to the listeners that are hearing me for the first time, Eddie Kingston is probably my favorite wrestler at this point. Like, he's just, I've been a fan of his since I want to say about 2005. And the fact he finally started to get his due the last 5 years, take my money, as Matt said earlier. Like, I followed him some weird places. The death. Club Council in TNA. There's a reason I have some IWA Mid-South DVDs, and Eddie Kingston is 90% of those reasons. So, yes, get him back somewhere at some point.
Amazing.
I think they're smart enough to do it. Like, he's such a good promo. You can throw him with damn near anyone, heel or face, and he's going to make for some good TV. And he's not afraid of laying on his back. Dude's like Tommy Dreamer since Tommy Dreamer. You'll never win the big one. Yeah, and that's fine. Cash some checks, Eddie. Cut some promos. Entertain me. Thank you.
I do think they could easily make Eddie Kingston the guy who wins the title and loses in his first defense so that you educate the fans that could happen. That's going to happen very soon. Maybe Bryan Danielson is a good guy to take that L on, but I think it's perfect for Eddie Kingston's character. Finally scales the mountain, wins the big one, wins the AEW world title, loses his first defense to like Switchblade or something. I think that could easily be done.
Dude, I love that. I wanted him to be AEW Ming, but if you're suggesting he be AEW Chris Sabin, hell yeah. Sign me up.
Like you said,
the upside's AEW Eric Young.
I'll take it. Like AEW Tommy Dreamer, I think is perfect. AEW Diamond Dallas Page, perhaps.
Yeah, and you know what? We remember all those guys and remember them fondly. So there are worse fates.
Absolutely.
Not everyone can be the best in the world. One person can.
That's true. Though 1,000 people claim to be in different ways. But yeah, you're right. I like the man of the people, the working class hero, Eddie Kingston. Our fourth match of this evening was Konosuke Takeshita versus a human tomato can, Damon Ace. I actually thought it was the perfect 10, Sean Spears, for a second. I was like, are they not even giving him an entrance or like saying it's his name? Is he about to get fired? But no, it was just a guy who looked shockingly like Ty Dillinger. It was his brother. But anyway, Konosuke Takeshita just absolutely raffle copters this clown. And then Don Callis cuts a promo. No new information here, but it's always awesome to hear Don Callis just get booed. Absolutely shitless. Another cool thing that must be noted is Konosuke Takeshita and Don Callis do not have entrance music. They come out to a chorus of boos. Their entrance is jeers, just like Tommaso Ciampa's used to be for a hot minute.
So this is going to be my second asking you about suspending my own disbelief thing. Were they sweetening the boos like during that promo? Like, I wouldn't blame them if they did, because it's hard to convince fans to boo loud enough to stop them from cutting a promo, and they've done it 2 weeks in a row now. Like, I kind of want to know if it's a shoot. It was hard to tell through my crappy TV speakers, mm-hmm. but it was so consistent. I have my doubts.
It is
no criticism, but it's just like that seems like a lot, you know.
That's a very good point, man, and that is absolutely worth noting. It's definitely possible. It's definitely possible, although, like, I too have, like, a shitty, not small, but a shitty, like, little TV. Like, yeah, it's hard to say. I would not put it past them, and it's not, like, a horrible thing if they did. It's fucking professional wrestling. But I bet you they might have been a little bit sweetening. You can really tell when you're in the building because you can hear it coming from the fucking speaker. You know what I mean? But
I'm sure you could also look left and right and see no one's lips moving. It's like, who's making all this goddamn noise?
Absolutely.
Also, who is cheering for Ryback right now? Stop it.
Ryback only cares about one person. Ryback. Oh, sorry, Ryback. Shut up. Ryback, the Duff Surly of professional wrestling. Moving on, Alex Marvez backstage with Christian Cage. Commotion heard in the locker room, but Christian stops Marvez from inspecting the scene, saying he is the uncrowned TNT champion, but Arn Anderson, he pushed him off a ladder, goddammit, in a ladder match. And thus, it's Arn's fault he's not the champ. So, since Arn took something from Christian, Christian will take something from Arn. Open door to reveal the Luchasaurus has beaten the shit out of Brock Anderson, Arn's son, of course. And Christian says it's an early Father's Day present for Arn Anderson. So I like this. Let's get Brock Anderson up and experienced. I think he's got a lot of potential. I always liked him when I saw him in the brief spurts we've seen him in AEW. He's impressed me anyway. And I think a good way to learn how to wrestle is to wrestle fucking Christian Cage. So giddy up.
Oh, heck yeah. And Christian Cage is like the third guy on this show that just seems to revel in being a heel. Swerve, Don Callis being the other two that just like they're in the pocket when they're getting people to hate them. Like, yes. Christian, he's a good baby face when he's got a baby face. He's an easy guy to cheer for because he's given us decades of fond memories. But man, him as a heel is just the thing to do. I'm all about him. Put him on my TV every week.
Yes, sir. Yeah. MJF is another one who just loves being.
I forgot about, you know, the world champion.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they got some good ass heels. They actually have a little bit of a baby face problem in AEW, but that's a whole fucking podcast in and of itself. Let's go to match number 5 on the evening for the TBS title, your new champion, Chris Statlander versus Anna Jax. So probably in terms of in-ring action, other than the squash, I'd say like the weakest match on the show, but I did quite like it. I still thought it was good. I thought it was better than last week's match versus Nyla Rose. Anna Jay looked really good. Statlander's getting her groove back. I thought this was a good match.
This is the best I've seen out of Anna Jay, I think. Like, she really impressed me. Again, I agree with you. It was not the best match on the show. I think it was a solid fourth. I have it ahead of the, as you put it, ECW-style tornado tag. But I'd say they're about on the same level. And perfectly acceptable wrestling match. Weren't too many... One thing I'll give a compliment on, and I didn't mention earlier, I was watching the version where I got to see the matches through the commercials, not in picture-in-picture, like just the uncut feed. And of the three matches that went through commercial breaks, I feel like Statlander and Anna Jay did the most during their commercial break, if that helps. They didn't just sit in a chin lock for 2 minutes. They were doing things... And the whole match, it had a good pace, told a good story. It's not going to be on anyone's best of compilation, but I was happy that I watched it. And that tombstone's going to kill some lady. Oh, my gosh. Not since Mongo McMichael have I been that terrified of a goddamn pile driver. Oh, absolutely. Boy.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Especially since, like... Chris Statlander's not the biggest woman on the roster, and like I think Anna Jay's taller enough that I was definitely worried that she was getting spiked there. Other than that, and it looked like she stuck the landing fine, but I was clutching my pearls while it was happening. We'll say that.
Rightfully so, man. No, that was a little scary. Not quite as scary as like Undertaker used to be, like 1991, like the arm trap tombstone. But yeah, maybe she might need a new finisher. But yes, tombstone pile driver for the win here. I think you covered it well. The only thing I think we have to add is that Taya Valkyrie is backstage just steaming, just got the boo-boo face on. She was big mad about this win. So I guess she had her bad girl face on. I guess Taya Valkyrie's turning heel here.
Her facial expressions were so wacky watching the TV. Like my two notes about it are, nice to see in AEW, they face the televisions, unlike WWE, yes, where it's just like, I'm going to stand next to it and look over my shoulder. But man, all the faces, it's like she was trying to do her best William Regal, and like only William Regal could be William Regal. Like she was just giving all of the emotion. It got the point across, just kind of hit it over the head with a hammer.
Yes, yeah, it was, yeah, definitely more power than finesse here coming from Taya Valkyrie's face.
Yes, it was like watching a movie from the 1940s where it's like, no, you're used to this being a stage show. You don't need a person in the back to see, you're on a TV screen. Come on, Tim.
but that is pro wrestling. But yeah, that is a flaw with pro wrestling on television, I guess. That is kind of the difference between genius pro wrestling and wacky girl doing wacky faces. Anyway, I thought this was an above average match. I would go a lot lower than the ECW tag. The tag team match worked for me because I felt like Jungle Boy and Hook had to go to war. Although Hook didn't bleed himself, he was involved in a bloodbath. I think it really helped both those characters. This was kind of just a match in Chris Statlander's rise, which we enjoyed but won't really remember. But it's still above average. We're gonna go 3 out of 5. Three Roger from American Dads out of 5 for the alien life form, Chris Statlander.
You know what? You make a good point, because even then, I didn't leave this match being more like thinking, oh, what a great champion Chris Statlander is. And she's fine. That good, in fact. I was really impressed with Anna Jay, and I left being like, yeah, I want to see her wrestle more. So you make a good point.
Well, thank you, brother. Yeah, I think it wasn't a bad match or anything, but I think too, like we have to remember that Chris down there, it's basically like 2 years out of the game, and she's going to take a little bit to get back to her top level. And that's absolutely completely fine. It's just a fact of life. Moving on to a quick little Toni Storm and Ruby Soho promo. I'm really loving Toni Storm's heel work here. Another good job by Toni and Ruby. They are challenging the winner of a fatal four-way match on Rampage, which is Sky Blue, Britt Baker, and two other people. The winner of that match will be contending versus Toni Storm on Dynamite next week for the AEW Women's Championship. I thought for sure it was going to be Britt Baker who won this match, and I don't want to give Rampage spoilers, so I will stop talking right now. And We will move on to our main event, which is match number 6 of the evening. Absolute Ricky Starks versus Switchblade Jay White 2, because they had a match on Dynamite recently. These guys, it's kind of weird. They have like a little bit of a like a disjointed chemistry. They don't quite click as much as I thought that they would. But it's still a very good match, but I don't know. I didn't quite like it as much as the stuff on the earlier portion of the show.
It's weird. Like, I really love the opening. I feel like it started off really hot. Starks's first babyface shine was really good. And then what the hell was he looking for under the ring for like 3 straight minutes? I think it eventually was to find a chair, but he uncovered half the goddamn ring. I saw that offensive lime green extension cord I was bitching about earlier under there in the process. They went up the ramp and stuff. There was a healthy section of kind of wasted time, but I feel like they got into the swing of it later. I feel like these guys have a way better match in them, but yeah. I'm with you. They weren't feeling it as much tonight. And this might seem as a weird critique, and maybe I'm the only person that feels this way. If I were AEW, try and stagger the shows that you babyface Ricky Starks and Orange Cassidy on, because outside of the gimmick, like the gimmick differences, they wrestle very similarly, and like they're great for a lot of the same reasons. So it was kind of weird having them both on the same show. Weird criticism for me. And maybe that's just... Everyone else listening is going to be like, what the hell is he talking about? Those two are nothing alike. But
no, man, you know,
I get the same vibe from him, you know?
In terms of how they wrestle, like the smaller dude fighting from underneath, exciting baby face who the crowd loves, bumps well, sells his ass off, exciting offense. I could see it, man. Absolutely. That's a really good call. It's something I hadn't thought of, but I'm right there with you. That's an excellent call, in my opinion. So the story of this match is that Ricky Starks is about to win. He has finally taken the fight to the Switchblade, gets him up in the Rochambeau, which as South Park fans will note is a game where you kick each other in the nuts. But anyway, that is his finisher, the Rochambeau, the running dominator. He hits it, but in the process knocks out the referee, a dreaded ref bump here in the main event of Dynamite. This leads, of all people, the Gun Club, Colton and Austin Gunn, to show up and lay out Ricky Starks with their cool finisher, which is it's called the 310 to Yuma. It's very similar to the FTR Shatter Machine move, except instead of a knee to the face, it's like a flatliner out of the elevated pancakes situation. So yes, 310 to Yuma. Then Jay White picks up Ricky Starks, hits the Blade Runner, and gets the W. Post-match, Juice Robinson obnoxiously runs out and screams right in Ricky Starks' face. I'm sure that pissed him off for real, because that was the most annoying thing I've ever seen a human do. But that was hilarious. Gotta love Juice Robinson. So yeah, good match, not great. Fine end to Dynamite.
He came out screaming in his face like he was Radko Gudas. Like, that's all I thought of when he did that, was just that picture of Gudas screaming in... Whose face did he scream in? Not that this is a hockey podcast, but that's going to just bother me now.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'll look it up after.
Actually, I forgot. See if I can look it up real quick. Yeah, was it Wall? It was the Leafs goalie, right?
Yes. Absolutely, it was Wall. Thank you. Because
that's hilarious.
Breaks there. It's not a hockey podcast. Just...
That's totally
like
fine.
Juice Robinson, Jay White combination. In a company that has 900 stables and 1,800 tag teams, they somehow have made their mark with me. And obviously there too, because Jay White is all over the upcoming shows as well. It felt like half the show was promoting future matches he was in.
And Good on them. Jay White is supremely talented, and more so. Oh, yeah. He's an acquired taste. He's the type of guy who you need to watch a couple times to go, holy shit, like one day, and you're like, wow, he's fabulous at this. So I can see he's like a perfect, not the absolute top of the card, but a perfect like supporting main eventer like that in wrestling. Like, he's the best version of 1999 Triple H or something, you know?
Oh, I like that. Old chainmail era Triple H.
Yes, yes. You give me, hit me with that Triple H. Oh man, the old.
You don't want to get hit with that copyright strike. That's too accurate. Whoa, slow down. Jim Johnson is just calling his attorney right now. We got McDivitt on the line.
Oh my God, yeah, Jesus. The last. Actually, that's the first thing we need. I'd love to hear from Jerry McDivitt. He seems like a friendly man. Anyway. Run through what we have coming up next in AEW.
Go ahead.
Talk about your fit. Oh, go ahead. What were you saying?
Just with the Starks Jay White match.
Oh yeah, okay.
It was good, and like you and I both touched on the fact that it probably wasn't the match those two were looking to have when they went out there tonight. They probably have a better one in them. With that finish though, I question the card placement. Like, why was the one bullshit finish the main event? That's just such a weird old WCW thing to do. I mean, as good as Orange Cassidy and Swerve was as the opener, I would have maybe put the Trios match with Blackpool Combat Club as the opener and put that as the main event and then stuck this, I don't know, third on the show. But I'm picking nits at this point. All in all, it was top to bottom a great show, the top was so much stronger.
1000% agree. Front loaded television show for sure. If I were to put my Tony Khan afro on here, and that is not an insult. I used to have one when I was a kid. I miss my Tony Khan afro. That is not an insult to you, Mr. Khan. But if I were to try to actually like put my Booker hat on and think like Tony Khan here, I think if you put Swerve versus Orange in the main event, I think everyone expects a Swerve title win there. And though, like, I don't think they would turn on Orange or anything, I think it might disappoint some fans to have Orange just like it feel like a little like, okay, it's just kind of the same. Orange wins again. I feel like it might be a little bit of a disappointment. And also, you want to tell people that Jay White is a fucking main eventer. So the way you do that is you put him in the fucking main event, you know? So I think in that way it makes sense. But in practice, the way the show played out, you're absolutely right. It was a flat ending to this show. And the show would have been better by closing with Orange versus Swerve, for sure.
Now, you know what? There was some wisdom in that fro, though. You, I feel like you just convinced me on this. That was persuasive. Yeah, I can absolutely see that. And if you aren't putting Orange and Swerve as the main event, which one do you put? So fair play to you, my man.
Right, exactly. Probably couldn't do, you know, Kinosuke versus Don Ace or Ace Ventura or whoever the fuck he fought. All right, let's run through these upcoming AEW cards quickly. We have Rampage on Friday, June 9th, 2023. It is the Lucha Brothers and Bandido versus Big Bill, Lee Moriarty, and All Ego, Ethan Page. Perhaps some ego, perhaps moderate amount of ego, Ethan Page. The ego death is occurring. Anyway, we also have a trios, the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass, Father Ass, Billy Gunn versus Serpentico, Luther, and Angelico, who are now calling themselves the Spanish Announce Project. Very good. The Fatal 4-Way match, which we alluded to, is Dr. Britt Baker versus Sky Blue versus Mercedes Martinez versus Nyla Rose. The winner of that match will face Tony Storm on Dynamite next week. And also, Powerhouse Hobbs in action, Patrick.
Oh my goodness.
yes, gather the kids, gather grandma, and get all the generations of the family together for Powerhouse Hobbs in action. No, I love Will Hobbs. I think they're doing him dirty, but that's a whole separate rant. Dynamite next week, MJF versus Adam Cole world title eliminator match. Another separate rant is how fucking much I hate that concept. If you beat the champ, you are thine champ. Anyway, neither here nor there. Tony Storm defends versus somebody, perhaps a rainy day, but perhaps Mercedes Martinez. Who knows? No, anyway, Tony Storm's going to defend and win the AEW title again versus some jabroni next week. Also, Mogul Embassy, that is Swerve Strickland, Brian Cage, and the Gates of Agony, Bishop Khan, and the other dude, Toa Leona, They will take on Orange Cassidy, Darby Allin, Keith Lee, and Sting, Steve Borden, on your program. Also, the Young Bucks and Hangman Page versus Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta. Holy fuck, that is a loaded card. Loaded card next week.
To be sure. Couple of notes. One, I keep up with AEW, but at what point did Billy Gunn start being billed on their promotional material as Daddy Ass? Because I'm guessing one wrestling truism. I have not yet in all my years run into a wrestling fan that has not had this experience at least once, where they were watching wrestling and somebody whose opinion to them matters walked in the room during maybe the most embarrassing wrestling segment ever. For me, it was my stepdad during the Triple H Stephanie McMahon divorce angle. And I'm assuming last night for somebody, they were watching the show and a parent or significant other walked in and is like, what are you watching that has daddy ass?
I can absolutely see. But I can see that going both ways. My roommate was dating this girl who actually just knew nothing about wrestling. And a large part of what got her into wrestling in the time that she was here, don't think she was going to be coming around too much anymore. But anyway, she got into wrestling watching with us. And a big thing was the Scissor Me Daddy and the Daddy Ass. And she loves like the bombastic characters in the costume. She loved Orange Cassidy and she loved the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass. And it was just like, she was just like, what the fuck is this? And just the whole story of, well, so he was the ass man and now he's an old man. So he came over and he was with his sons, but his sons don't like him. But these guys embraced him and now they're doing the scissor thing and he's the daddy. So it's the Scissor Me Daddy Ass. And this wrestling company, they like to run with things, you see. And the crowd really, really took this one and they fucking ran with it. So, well, if you see, there's lots of signs and it's quite a long explanation when you really get down to it. But it's hilarious. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you touch on the fact that, so this wrestler named Danhausen is actually the best thing that's happened to the Gunn family in 20 years. It's very strange. You see them more than you see him anymore, but he's neat. And yeah, fair enough.
lots of moving parts. Oh, also, I guess we should say Collision. The first one is the 17th June, Saturday. And the main event of that show is a trios match. Tag team champions FTR and CM Punk versus the Switchblade, the Juice Man, and Samoa Joe. Jay Juice and Joe versus Punk and FTR. That'll be a lot of fun. Also, Forbidden Door is on June 25th. And we have Brian versus Kazuchika Okada and motherfucking Osprey Omega 2. Let's go, Patrick.
Yeah. That could be a three-match card, and if those are two of them, whatever. Yep. Make the whole thing 5 hours. I'm there.
Yes, those two matches and a 75-man New Japan Rambo. Let's fucking do it.
Okay, we're testing my patience here, then. Like, all right, you said what you said. We're holding you to it.
Monkeys,
sit through this to get to your matches.
I love it. Okay, before we get you out of here, man, I have a little questionnaire for you, a little two-question questionnaire I've been asking my guests just to learn a little bit behind the fan, you know, and it's not like it doesn't have to be super well thought out, just first thing that comes to your mind. And we kind of touched on it. I'm not sure which of the two this person will be, but I think you might be one of the two answers. So, Patrick, who is your favorite professional wrestler of all time and why? Just you had to pick one, just top of your head, no pressure.
Oh, man. So since I already talked to Betty Kingston earlier, because it's always between these two, both of them are Eddies, Eddie Kingston or Eddie Guerrero.
Nice.
Because they're two very, it's like a distinct line in my wrestling fandom. Eddie Guerrero was my guy from like 1996 until his passing, and then Eddie after. And reason why, just like, even when I was like a complete blind 11-year-old Mark, seeing Nitro for the first time, I'm like, man, this guy with the mullet is awesome. And I just kept wanting to see him. Didn't matter, good guy or bad guy. Like, he was the highlight of those shows back in the day for me. And it's nice to have a wrestler that didn't end up ruining that love. So it definitely sucks how he went, but man, big Eddie Guerrero fan, to be sure.
Awesome, man. What a great answer. And that's such a good point at the end too. Like, yeah, though it fucking, he went out tragically and a goddamn 50 years before his fucking time. At least we still get to love and appreciate his work and will forever. And people know that he's possibly the most God gifted wrestler ever, like the most talented heel face, power wrestler versus smaller guys, speed wrestler versus bigger guys, technician, just everything you could possibly do, promos in and out of the ring, sacrificed his body in multiple ways for the business. And yeah, just an all time legend. Fuck. Ah, pour one out for Eddie. Great call. Who is your current favorite of all time? If you could only pick one guy whose match you had to watch or promo you had to watch right now, if you were scrolling through YouTube, who's your favorite? Who's the one you're checking out right now, June 8th, 2023?
Well, even though I've seen damn near everything he's done, that I'm glad it's two-parter, because there we go, it's Eddie Kingston. It started with mostly the promos, and you know, the promos would get me excited to see, like, who's Claudio Castagnoli back in 2005? That was a valid question. And then I'd watch these two guys wrestle and be like, oh my God, this guy that is built like me or potentially even slightly worse than me, he can go. And he wrestles the All Japan Kings Road style and cuts promos like peak Mick Foley. To me, him and Alex Shelley were the two guys that I followed, and I'm like, how are they not millionaires? Like, seeing all the other indie guys that, well, you and I sort of mutually and on our own followed during our years knowing each other, and like, those were just the two where it's like, it never made sense, and then finally Eddie got his turn the last few years, and it's nice that I'm a bit older now, and so I don't have hope. If that makes sense. Like, well, it's just one of those things where it's like, I never thought that fucking Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, was ever going to be a world champion, let alone most popular wrestler on earth at some point. So like, that exceeded any expectations for any of my guys. I thought Eddie was going to be retired before he ever made it to AEW, and he almost was. So playing with house money, like, every chance I get to see him wrestle, every promo I get to hear him cut is a gift. And he just, if I were a pro wrestler, I'd like to think I would be doing what he is doing and has done. And I definitely get how he's not for everyone. That's fine. He's my favorite wrestler. You pick Ricochet if you want. We're good. Nah. I'm saying I don't love Ricochet. That sounded like I just hate that guy. No, he's just like the antithesis of Eddie Kingston to me. Love Ricochet. In fact, they had a banger in Chikara.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they did. Yeah, Eddie Kingston, like you said, yeah, the Mick Foley promos and the, like, the Kings Road style, the shout out to the Misawas and the Kobashis and such, man. Yeah, it's a perfect mix for me and my bit of fandom too. I love Eddie Kingston. He'd probably be my answer for favorite right now too. The promos that he cuts in Chikara, so many legendary ones, and you could just, like, there's a playlist of 122 I think on YouTube, and you can just watch that for like an hour and a half. You don't even need to know anything about the feud. The other day I saw a promo he cut on Lince Dorado, of all people. He's out in the rain after a Chikara show. Lince kicked out of the back fist. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Out of the back fist. Those fans won't be out there at your funeral. They won't be in that casket with you. You call me sick, but it's a cool world. Bundle up. Yeah, I know the promo. God damn, that man is king.
That might be one of the best promos I've ever seen. I was just sitting there with like goosebumps on my arm at like 12:30 last night on YouTube watching this promo, like, mouth agape. Like, this fucking guy is a genius. Like you said, how is he not a world champion 7 times over? And I guess, oh yeah, he had his demons. And like he says in a number of promos, he spent 2.5 years in a drug rehab, this and that. But yeah, man of the people, Eddie Kingston. It definitely is one of my fucking favorites too, man. Great answer. Oh, this was a lot of fun, brother. Glad to talk to you again. We got to do this more often. Always welcome to come by Sunday night's main event on our after parties or whatever and fucking talk some shop, talk some professional wrestling with us, friend. Good times.
Oh, dude, it was a pleasure. I appreciate you having me. I appreciate your listenership for tolerating me. And anytime you need someone to pinch hit or want to have me on for a specific reason, let me know. I'm there.
Amazing, man. Well, yeah, we'll definitely get you the regular rotation on guests on this year's show. But yeah, we like to spread it out. So we might not give you a call for a couple months, but that doesn't mean we don't love you, brother. Anyway, our intro song is MJF's theme song. Fun fact, it's a free to use song on YouTube, and it's also our outro song. That's how we do here. My name is Matthew Ederer. I am on Facebook and Insta, but not Twitter. Feel free to find me on those things if you're so inclined, I suppose. Whatever, it's all good. Social media is hopefully dying. Let's go. So thank you all for listening, everybody. My name is Matthew. To quote the great Brody Lee, yeah, yeah, yeah.